This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Firstly, generally at this time of the year where we have to start a bit later, I'll try and make the shiur a little bit shorter. And particularly this Shabbos, as I mentioned earlier, our new son went out of his way to make sure that he didn't come at a time that would cancel any shiurim. I felt it would be wrong to use him as an excuse not to have a shiur, but we'll make it short so that I can still do what needs to be done. The sefer starts with a pasuk, Ve'ele Shemois Bnei Yisrael Haboim Mitzroimo. These are the names of the sons of Yisrael, the sons of Yaakov who came to Mitzroim. Eis Yaakov, together with Yaakov, Ish Uvei Soibo, each man with his family came. This is a very exciting pasuk because this is the first time in Jewish history that a family of one of the Ovis, or that any Jewish family for that matter, was pure and full in its entirety. Avraham Avinu was the founder of our people, had a very great son, he had Yitzchok, but Yitzchok had a brother, Yishmael. So Avraham Avinu, as great an educationalist as he was, only had a 50% success rate. Yitzchok, how much greater an educationalist could one wish for a father than Yitzchok? Grew up in the home of Avraham Avinu, and yet Yitzchok, the second of our forefathers, had two children. He had Yaakov and Esav. One inherited and followed him, and one went off. He had a 50% success ratio. And here comes Yaakov with 12 sons, and Ishu Vesoibo, each one, each man with his entire family, each of the 12 sons, their wives, their children, come as one unit, Klal Yisrael, together with Yaakov Avinu. And so there's something that's rather an appropriate pasuk for me. There's something that tells us here, or that we need to find, regarding what was it that Yaakov, who had 12 sons, achieved 100% success, whereas Avraham and Yitzchok, who only had two children, achieved only a 50%. The first thing it does is it dispels the theory that the more children you've got, the less attention you can give them, and all that kind of nonsense. Because you see that it seems to work the opposite. That it was the biggest family, it was a family of 12 sons plus daughters, that achieved 100% success ratio. Where there were small families in Avraham and Yitzchok could give all their attention to two children in Gansan, they only got a 50% success. And look what kind of success, good, great success with Canaan Horror. Who can complain about a Yitzchok? Who can complain about a Yaakov for a son? But look at the other side. Yishmael, all the Arabs, children of Avraham Avinu. Esau, all of them from Yitzchok. That's a pretty serious indictment, in a sense, of their educational methods. What did Yaakov do in the education of his children that Avraham and Yitzchok failed to do in the education of his? And it's amazing how Chazal are willing to ask such questions and are willing to look at it openly. It's true, it can happen that even the finest of educators and the finest of parents have children who go off. Happens. But Chazal are not willing to accept it that way. This is not coincidental. There must be something inherent in the upbringing of Yitzchok and Yaakov respectively, and their brothers, different to the upbringing of the Shvatim, of the 12 tribes of Israel, who were brought up so with such a high degree of success. Says the Medrash, the opening Medrash on the Sefer, Hadolu Dichtiv. This refers to the pasuk in Mishlei, Choseich Shivtoi Seinei Benoi. Spare the rod, that means you hate the child. A child that is brought up without strong discipline, that's a parent who doesn't feel much for the child. A parent who loves his child, shocharoi musar, gives him chastisement, he makes sure that he disciplines him, that he gives him musar. Benoyak sheba'ilam, it is normal in the world, adam sha'imei lo'i chaveiroi, If I were to come to my friend and say to him, Plene hiko levanecho, you know, so and so beat up your child, he hit your child, you're edim ad lechayov. The father gets indignant and gets hold of the other man and wants to do him in good and proper. How dare you raise your hand against my child? We take grave exception if such a thing happens. In the United States, I'm told that if a teacher, never mind, hits a child, that's already that was out years ago already. But if a teacher even chastises a child, the teacher is sued by the parents for verbal abuse and for taking it out on their children and denying their constitutional rights. You can't talk badly to people.
So what then does it mean that one who spares the rod hates the child? Surely it's the opposite. Surely if one beats a child, that shows there's something wrong. The lamedecho, to teach you, shekol hamuinea benoi min hamardus, anybody who protects his child from corporal punishment. And it means not only corporal punishment, one has to realize that the degree of the punishment being corporal depends on the sensitivity of the child. There are some children to whom the raising of an eyebrow is already corporal punishment. It hurts the child. There are some children, a harsh word from a parent hurts the child. Those children don't need corporal punishment. But a child who doesn't get hurt by a hard word needs to be hurt physically. So when we talk about sparing the rod and corporal punishment, what we're talking about is hurting the child. And in all the child-raising lectures and shiurim that I give, I emphasize the difference between hurting the child and damaging the child. A parent is not only entitled to hurt his children, he is obligated to hurt his children when they do wrong. They need to learn the consequence of wrongdoing, and the only way they can learn the consequence of wrongdoing is through that relationship. And in fact, that's what the Ribono Shel Olam does with us. He hurts us when we do wrong. Nothing wrong with hurting a person when they've done wrong. That's how one educates them. As long as you don't damage the person. The parent has to work out in terms of the degree of sensitivity of the child how much hurt the child can take before the child gets damaged. The hurt the child needs. And this comes to teach us that anybody who protects their children from hurt, from corporal punishment, as I've now defined it, soif bo l'tarbus ro. The result is that child goes off. Tarbus ro is uncultured. Tarbus ro is off the road, out of Yiddishkeit. Either the child ceases to be frum, or the child ceases to be a mensch, or the child becomes uncultured. That's what happens. V'soneihu, and the result of that is hatred. The parent begins to dislike the child, because the child no longer represents the type of upbringing which the parent wanted. And then the parent looks at his adolescent child and says, what did I do wrong? Where did we go wrong? This kind of child, is that how I behaved when I was a child? What would my parents or grandparents say if they saw my children, how embarrassed I would be? And the parent gets all worried and all upset. What has been the problem? The parent has been scared to hurt his children. And then the Medrash goes through a run of history. Avraham and Yishmael, who got the better treatment? Who was treated better? Yishmael or Yitzchak? Yishmael was treated better. Yishmael was the firstborn, he was treated. Avraham had a terribly soft spot for Yishmael. Yitzchok, different story. Who came out right? Yitzchok comes out right. Yitzchok and Esau, that whole story is to teach us that the soft spot that Yitzchok had for Esau didn't do Esau any good. What happens with Yaakov? Yaakov has to be away from home for years, and he learns in Chamber Eva, and he's off to Lavan. He has a hard, hard life as a child. What parent would have been able to do that to their children? It's cruel. And look what Yaakov comes out. Esau has all the comforts. He's not sent away to yeshiva, he doesn't have to go overseas, he's not sent away to Laban, nothing. He sits at home, he's his father's pet, he has the absolute run of the home, never hurt, never punished, never chastised. Look what happens to an Esau. And so the Medrash goes through recounting many other such cases where the father's close relationship with their child led to the downfall of that child. There are two kinds of close relationships. There's a close relationship with a child where the father feels so close that he can't hurt the child. That doesn't really mean a close relationship with the child. What does that mean?
A father that feels so close to his child that he can't hurt him. That's a father who loves himself. That's all. And he can't take the suffering that he feels when he sees his child hurt. That's all. If he really loved his child, he would simply weigh up. The hurt that I'm causing the child is in the child's interest. Sometimes you find parents who are very brave and take their little babies and throw them into the swimming pool. And one says, how can one do that? A father can do that. A mother shouldn't be able to do that. That's a bit much. It's a bit much for a mother. A father should theoretically be able to do that. Why? The right thing is good. There's no other way the child will learn to swim. Best thing. But a father can't do that so easily. Why not? Because he can't take it. Not because the child can't take it. The child can take it. The child will recover. He can't take it. So when we find ourselves protecting our children from hurt, it's not because we love our children. Because we love ourselves. And we don't want to feel the pain of seeing our children suffer. That true love of a child would bring the parents to hurt the child wherever necessary. And to hurt the child in the way which is necessary. In order to make sure that the child doesn't grow up as a Shalom, as an Esav or a Yishmael, but rather as a Yitzhak or a Yaakov. And so the Medrash goes through. And when you look at the other side, you look at the ones that the fathers did treated very nicely, they all came out bad. However, when it comes to the good ones, he says, look at Yitzchok, his father at 37 years old, his father takes him and ties him up on the Mizbeach, and look how Yitzchok comes out. Yitzchok used to give musar, used to chastise Yaakov. Yitzchok taught Yaakov Torah and he disciplined him in his yeshiva. And he learned what his father taught him. He taught him what his father taught him. Then he had to leave his father. And he had to hide himself away in the yeshiva of Eivor to learn Torah. That's why he turned out the way he did. And so, Yaakov, Yisrael is bonov the leader. Yaakov Avinu chastised his children and punished them when necessary. The Lindom Derochov, and he taught them his ways. Shaloi Hoyol Bohem Psoilis. And there wasn't one that turned out not good. Shekain Ksiv, as we see here, this is the result of such an upbringing. They all came as one family, with one value system, with one method, with one discipline, with one goal. Hishvon kulon liYaakov. The Torah categorizes them all with Yaakov. Shekulon tzadikim kiyetze bohuyu. They were all, every one of his 12 sons, with tzadikim of the same stature as Yaakov. There you see how one who loves his children doesn't deny him chastisement. They give their children what chastisement they need, what discipline they need, what punishment they need, and look what happens, look what results. It's almost a disappointing medrash when one looks at something, at results so great, and one traces the source of that result to something so banal, to something so very primitive and basic. Take a home like the home of Yaakov Avinu, and we say to the educational experts, we say to Chazal, how did he do it? How did Yaakov produce an entire family of tzaddikim, not one off? Tzaddikim of his own stature, how did Yaakov do it? And we expect the Chazal to give us Kabbalistic reasons and all sorts of educational techniques of the schools he sent them to, and the environment and this and that. Is the Medrash one thing. Yaakov wasn't afraid to punish them. That's how he is. It's nothing else is necessary. A value system, a healthy home, a healthy value system, and the determination and caring of the father to keep the child on the straight and narrow. That was the reason, that was the success. Very simple cause for a very profound effect. And we have another case of this in the parasha. The king of Mitzrayim told the Jewish midwives to kill the boys. In Bein Ruvan, he eternally said, in Bati Vachoyah, the boy kill him, and if it's a girl, she can live.
And then it says, Vatireinu amayalda yisesu elikim, and the midwives feared Hashem, v'loy osu kasher dibeir aleihem melech Mitzrayim, and they didn't do as the king of Egypt had told them. The pasuk should stop there, as Mr. Dratman mentioned this morning. Vatachagena esayelodim, and the pasuk goes on to say, and they preserved the lives of the boys. Says the Medrash, what does it mean? If the midwives did not do what they were instructed, surely we know that means that they kept the children alive. Why does the Torah have to tell us that they kept the children alive? So the Medrash Yesh Kilus B'Teich Kilus. There is praise within praise. Loi Dayon Shavakimus Dvoros. Wasn't enough for them that they didn't keep his word. You think it's enough? They don't kill the little boys, and when the birth is over, they go. No. Eloid they carried on applying themselves to the welfare of the babies. Yeshmoim shoyu anius. Some of the mothers were very poor. And the midwives used to go to get food and water from the wealthier homes and bring it to the poor ones. Voice the most nice and they used to come and bring it to the poor. And that's why in the highest of B'nehem, they used to give life to the sons. It's very interesting. Altogether, we tend to limit our visions of what our professions are, and what our callings are, and what our jobs are. And as time has gone on, people see themselves as becoming more and more specialized. And it has to be that way with the volume that we handle. Each person has to become specialized, but it comes to a point where the holistic understanding of what it's all about ceases to be important and ceases to be a factor. What is a miyaledes? We call it a chaya also. What is a midwife? A miyaledes, one who gives life, a chaya, a source of life. In today's environment, and in a normal situation of any environment, she defines her job as assisting the mother in giving birth. Once that's over, her job is over, then somebody else takes over, then you have other nurses that take over. That's her job done, now she gets on with the next one. But if one really understands that her job is not just to help give birth, but to help give life, then she is not professionally entitled to withdraw from the case until she's satisfied that the child can be sustained. And to bring a child into physical life in the full knowledge that the mother hasn't the ability to sustain the child and the child will die, that's not a midwife. And today in the hospital I was thinking, that's what I had to prepare the shiur today. And it was the midwife who helped me prepare it. A wonderful woman, very, very dedicated and very meticulous and very careful and very good. But when her job's over, she wheels the mother out and she wheels the baby out and that's it, now on to the next one. Is her job over? Say Shifra and Pua, no. My job is not over until I'm sure that the child can be sustained. I'm the miyaledes, I'm the one who gives life. I don't know yet that these children can live. And so you'll see the midwives running through the streets, going to the Chevra Kedisha, borrowing and fetching and raising money and getting food and water, and we'll say, 1 second, are you the Yevigminus Chesed here? So now I'm a midwife. You're the midwife, so what are you doing running around collecting money? There's a baby that won't survive if I don't collect money. That is my role as a midwife. It's just a different approach, it's a different attitude to a vision of a mission, of where my job ends, what my job really is. Another example. There were children that were born where the midwife realizes through the ultrasounds and things that were taken before that the child is not going to be born normal. That there's going to be an imperfection in the body of the child. Again, what is the midwife's job? To help the mother give birth as easily and as healthily as possible. That's her job. Not Shifra and Pua. If our job is to give life, then that's not sufficient. There's still time for tefillah. Aim those be tefillah. So you would come in and you'd see the midwife, what she's doing, she's busy saying to him. What are you saying to him for? Is that your job? Yes, that is my job. We have a problem here, and the child has to be born correctly. And they used to put a case to the Ribbono Shel Olam.
You know what Paro instructed us. You know we've never given effect to that. Why don't we listen to Paro? Because we want to fulfill your wish. That's why we're doing it. We're loyal to you, not to him. Please, Ribbono Shel Olam, make sure for our sake that this child comes out in order. And what do you think the Jewish people would say if the babies are born imperfectly? They'll say, the midwives tried to do him in. You know what Paro's instruction was? The midwives tried to do him in. And you, Ribbono Shel Olam, know that it's not true. Nobody else can know because nobody else is present. So the only way we can save our reputations and they can see how we're handling it is if the baby comes out right. And they used this card that they had up their sleeves to twist the Ribbono Shel Olam's arm to make sure that all the imperfections were sorted out and that the children came out, whole and proper and correct. That was the role of the midwives. So much more than they were expected to do on the surface. Ribbono Shel Olam used to listen to their voices and they came out perfect. Other examples we give, the Medrash gives, goes on and on, how they used to be mispalel, how they used to pray, how they used to use all their energies, material, physical and spiritual, to ensure the success of the survival of the child in perfection. Those were the Miyaldas, Shifra and Pua. So what should they get schar for? What should they be rewarded for? For not murdering or for going far beyond that? Not murdering, that's good. It's true that they endangered their lives. It's true they were instructed to murder the children. But still, what society rewards people for not murdering? When one gives a box of chocolates afterwards to the midwife, what is one giving it to her for? Thank you for not murdering my child. That was really good of you. You could have killed the child and you didn't. Tadetis. Wonderful. It's not what one does. That you were mispalel. Imagine such a case where there's a crisis in a delivery ward and the midwife is mispalelis and she takes out her tehillim and she works, and then afterwards the mother is poor and the midwife goes and she raises money and she helps and she finds and she works, and then the family give the midwife a present. What are they giving her the present for? For doing so much more than you had to do. Not for not killing the child. And these midwives did get very great schar. This is a medrash in the Yalchus at the end of Vayakel and Tafyud Beis. What was the reward that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave these midwives? Vayas lohem batim. He gave them homes. Batei kuhunu malchus. Homes of priesthood and royalty. Vicheved not lo kuhunu malchus. The Cheved got Kuhuna and Malchus, Scholo Moshe V'Aaron. The reward that your Cheved got was Moshe and Aaron. That was her reward. Such children. The first Kohen Gadol and the first king, the man who took B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, her children. The man of Miriam, Scholo Chochma. And what did Miriam get? She got wisdom. Hermid Mimeno Betzalel. Betzalel was from her. Great and wonderful children. As a result of what? As a result of their dedication as midwives, what was it that they did? Says the Pasuk, Vayehi ki yoru hameyaldos es ha'elikim. And it was because the midwives feared Hashem. Vayas lohem botim, that he made for them these homes and gave for them and gave to them this reward. Says the Baron Kotler, they didn't get the reward for raising the money for the children. They didn't get the reward for the tefillah, for the prayer that they gave. They got the reward for the yirat shemayim, for the fear of God, which counteracted their fear of power and stopped them killing the children. That's what they got their reward for. As it says, Batsirena miyaldos es ha'elokim. And the miyaldos, the midwives, feared Hashem. The loyosuk asher dibur alei melech Mitzrayim, and they didn't do as the king of Mitzrayim had instructed them. So what did their God-fearingness bring them to? To not murdering the children. Then, furthermore, in addition to that, they worked for the well-being of the child.
that their Yirush Shemayim is what they were rewarded for. And what did the Yirush Shemayim achieve? That they didn't murder the children. So we have a strange case here where they're being rewarded for not murdering, they're not being rewarded for all the good things that they did. Another case of great results from simple beginnings. What is the result of Moshe and Aaron? A battalion. For what? For fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam, just for being scared. Very, very simple. Very, very straightforward. The fear is what set it all off. The fear of Hashem, one of the most primitive of religious emotions. That's what set off the whole process, which resulted in this tremendous chayr and this wonderful reward which the Mialdus receives. And the Baron Kotler brings, in fact, from the Share Tshuva, the Share Shlishi Peretes, Simon Tes, where the Share Tshuva says that reward is for doing mitzvahs. You don't get reward for being passive. V'avodah hi b'mitzvah satzluyas b'maisah. Avodah is an act of mitzvahs. Shoresh ha-gemul chelef ha-avodah b'kiyum mitzvah aseh. The root of reward is in the performance of mitzvah aseh, of positive mitzvahs. And he goes on to show it and to prove it. And then he asks, but what about the Gemara that says, Yoshav loy ovar avero nesim mischar koise mitzvah? What happens? The Gemara says that if a person is passive and withholds himself from doing an aveira, he has the opportunity to do wrong, he has the desire and the passion to do wrong, and he holds back. Then he gets the reward of a mitzvah. It's as if he did a mitzvah. But what is he getting the reward for? We've just said that the source of reward is from action. When you do something, that generates reward. If you're sitting passive, what reward does that generate? Explains Rabbeinu Yonah, Gam haschar hazeh ikoro v'yosoid mitzvah aseh. The reward for not doing wrong is also because you've performed a positive mitzvah. Don't think that that's passive. When you have the passion and the opportunity to do wrong and you don't, that's active, not passive. Why? What is the mitzvah aseh? Shekovash yitzrei b'yir aseh l'si. That you use the yiras Hashem to overcome your passion. That's the positive action. Which is an amazing statement. That means what Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us is that the only way to stop doing evil when you have the opportunity and the desire is Yirush Shamayim. There isn't anything else to stop you. Talking about where you've got the opportunity, so you're not going to be caught, and you've got the passion and you've got the desire. So why not do that? Why not act? Why not do that which you want to do and you've got the opportunity to do it? You've got an opportunity to make some money a little bit dishonestly. You've got the opportunity to have a relationship which isn't correct. Nobody will know, nothing. You have the desire and the passion. And you don't. The only thing that can be stopping you, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, is Yirush Shamayim. The Rabbeinu Shlom says, no, I'm scared. On whatever level of Yirush Shamayim, whatever you're scared of, whether it's fear of punishment or fear of the exaltedness of the Rabbeinu Shlom, it doesn't matter. The fact is, at the end of the day, that's a mitzvah asay, that's a positive mitzvah of Es Hashem Elokecha Tiro. You are obligated to fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. And this is the expression of that mitzvah aseh. That's what you're rewarded for when you don't do an avera. You're not rewarded for the fact that you didn't do wrong. You're not rewarded for the fact that there wasn't a negative consequence of your actions, that you avoided negative consequences. What you're being rewarded for is a positive mitzvah. You were mekayim the mitzvah, you fulfilled the mitzvah of fearing God. That's what you're rewarded for. And the Baron Kotler says, that's the essence of it all. And with the Mialdus too, it's true they did all sorts of wonderful things. But the source of it all, where it all started from, was Batireno HaMialdus Esoy Elokim. The midwives feared the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that was the source of their reward. And we have to be careful in not over-sophisticating spiritual matters. We have to remember that at the end of the day, Yaakov's dream of the Sulam, Mutzav, Arzo, that ladder with its 2 feet on the ground, the Roshu Nagia Ad HaShemayim, and its head reaching up to the sky, that's Yiddishkeit. And that's the uniqueness of Yiddishkeit. The ladder always has to have its 2 feet on the ground. And all great things are achieved by taking that first step off the ground onto the first rung. From the first rung one can go to the second, and the second to the third. If one's ladder isn't firmly placed on the ground, nothing can be achieved. And today people don't like that because people like instant results. And when you see a tall ladder,
It's head up in the sky. Who wants to start at the bottom and go step by step? People don't like doing that in business anymore. They like to start at the top. And they go and they take an MBA and then they want to run and they want to be managing directors immediately. They don't go the old way. You remember how the old way was? Start off right at the bottom. I remember when I started with an international trading company, and then we'd eventually agreed that despite all the negatives, they should take me on and I should work for them. Two of the directors sat and chatted among themselves in my presence. Where should we start in? What should we do? So the one said to the other, I think the World Tour is where we should start. I couldn't believe my ears. The other one said, yes, that's a good idea. And I was already picturing these exotic destinations and all these offices all over the world, and I was just wondering whether they were going to send me first class or business class, and I just couldn't believe my luck where I had fallen into. And here they chatted a bit. They said, yep, the World Tour is where you start. Good. First stop is the mailing room. You spend a week in the mailing room with the messengers, you learn how to send letters off. That's the first stop of the World Tour. And that was the most wonderful training. Sulam Mutsavasa, if you're going to get to the top, there is only one way, and you're going to start at the bottom. There isn't another way. There just isn't another way. And if one's trying to reach the top without that first step, it doesn't work. Somewhere it collapses. And that's why people like mysticism today. It's also become so possible, so interesting, anything mystical, because that's Roshu Magia Hashemayim. To straight away start dabbling in things that appear to be connected to the sky, and one feels elevated without really trying. It's wonderful. Dealing and dabbling in all sorts of mystical spiritual things, the fact is there's no connectedness. You cannot have a connection because it's all a sulam. So there's a ladder, and a ladder has to be going on rung by rung. And what is the first step? Yira Shumai. The end of the day, that first step of that ladder is to be scared of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the first step in the World Tour. That's the mail room of the passage of Torah. To start at that first rung, boring, unromantic, not in any way glamorous, plain and simple awareness of the Ribbono Shel Olam and fear of the consequences of action. That's the first step. And from there, anything can happen. That's the whole Rise of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoel, Toiro Meviol Yidei Zehirus. When you start learning, what's the first step that you come to? Zehirus. Inhibition. How to hold yourself back. I think I've told you that I was at a hotel in Switzerland a few years ago, and there was a managing director of South African Airways, in fact. He walked in, a Froom hotel, but he was staying there. And he walked in, and I saw he was all exhilarated. I said, where have you been? He said, we went on our first skiing lesson. I said, that's interesting. The whole family? He said, yeah, the whole family. I said, how did it go? He said, terrible. I said, what was wrong? He said, they don't know how to teach you here. I said, you're in Switzerland. What do you mean in South Africa? Do they know how to teach you to ski better? He says, the first thing they should teach you when you're learning how to ski is how to stop. Once they've taught you how to stop, they can teach you how to stop. They don't do that. They teach you how to get going. They don't tell you how to stop. And I assured him that I would use that in Shiur in the years to come. The first thing you've got to learn is how to stop. It's a use. When you know how to stop, you can start learning how to go. Then you can move. To start with mysticism before you've got zehirus, before you know halacha, before you can withhold yourself, before there's musa, before there's discipline, self-discipline. One's playing around with dangerous things. One's learning how to travel at high speeds without knowing where the brake is. Without knowing how to bring the car to a standstill when one has to. Terribly dangerous. That's the Yaakov Ish Vesei. Each man comes with his family, a complete unit. Why? Because of the discipline, because of that first step of the run, is the zehirus. There was no sparing the rod. The children knew what wasn't allowed. Before they learned what was allowed, they learned what wasn't allowed, and they knew how to restrain themselves, how to operate that way, and how to live within that way. The great achievement of the Mialdes, achievements which brought the birth of Moshe and Aaron and Bezalel, came from what? The knowledge of the midwives as to how not to listen to Paro. They fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. Once the first rung is well established, once one knows how not to do what one wants, then there is nothing that can escape the human ability. There is no height that cannot be reached if one continues to move step by step. My father, whenever he used to give lectures on free will, which used to be a hot topic in those days, he used to ask his audience to define free will. And inevitably people used to say, the obvious, the freedom to do as I please. And my father would say to them, repeat that please, and they would say, yeah, freedom to do as I please. And my father would say, and is free will a human condition? Yeah, free will is a human condition. He would say, I don't understand you. I have a dog, he used to say, an intelligent dog, but still only a dog. And he does exactly as he pleases. He's free to do as he pleases. Surely that doesn't make him a human being. Being a human being is freedom not to do as he pleases. That an animal can't do. An animal is not able to do as he does, is not able not to do as he pleases. The only way you can train an animal is to make him to please, not to do something else. He's got to feel that if he does this, it will hurt him so badly that he doesn't want to do it anymore. But to want to do something, and to confront that desire, to say, that's what I desire. And Chazal say, when you get the opportunity to do something wrong, don't say, ah, sis, I would never do such a thing. Ah, how could I do this? Eat hazard. Oh. Say, ah, it smells good. Does this smell good? Would I love to have some? Yes, the Baishan says, no, that's it. It's no kunst not to want it. Not to want it that the animal can also do. To want it and say, that's irrelevant. My desire is irrelevant. That's what I want, but it's not good for me. I have the ability to turn it off. That's free will. And that's the first step of the run. That's the Zihirus. That's the Yiru Shemayim, which the Miyaldos had, which Yaakov Avinu taught to his children, and which led to the consequences of the entire Sefer Shemos, which we're now going to follow in reading.